Hello and welcome to Nerdly Rambling. Today's segment will be on consoles and gaming, next gen rumors, part 5. Doing a part 5 on this, just more information just keeps coming out. So what I'm going to start with is lots of pre-orders that have been, well, pre-ordered for the 2020 season. Both from Sony and from Microsoft are now being delayed to 2021. I think a lot of that has to do with they took too many pre-orders and they just don't have enough stock. Again, something else that I also came up with in the last segment was that, like, should it be delayed till 2021, and that there were rumors going around that there were issues happening with the PlayStation 5 where they weren't fully working properly. So that might be part of the delays as well. So although some of you may end up getting your console in the 2020 year, a lot of you are probably going to have to wait until 2021 for your pre-order to be fulfilled. And then the rest of you that didn't pre-order and stuff like that are going to have to wait further into the 2021 year anyway. I think it's a good idea to wait anyway, because as most of you know, any issues that come out with any consoles or anything like that, it's going to happen with the first gen consoles, meaning the first set of them that come out. So the ninth gen, first gen versions. And it's much better just to wait. And then that way, sometimes you end up saving some money by getting one on sale and stuff anyways. So now that they're being delayed, anyone who is willing to wait, you're not going to be waiting too much longer than the people that weren't willing to wait. So moving on to other information regarding the different consoles and companies and all the rumors that are going around, and confirmed information as well, we'll start talking about the Xbox Series consoles first, and then go over some other information and segue into PlayStation with some final thoughts. So first with Microsoft, they've come up with a feature where you can either download or upload, or whatever you want to call it, when you put in a disc, you can choose, or if you're doing a digital download, you can choose whether to download either multiplayer or the campaign version of the game, or part of the game, I should say. Whether they're going to be doing this also in segments, so like you can maybe download a certain amount of the campaign, so a certain amount of levels or whatever, or it has to be just campaign or multiplayer, I haven't heard too much on that just yet, but I do love that Microsoft is doing this because it's going to make the issue with the amount of information all the games are and how small the hard drives are. I'm going to call them hard drives, even though they're solid-state drives. It's going to help fix some of that issue, because you only have so much room on lots of these systems. So if you can just download portions of the game, even though you own the whole game, and then maybe delete it or whatever you're going to be playing on the game, rather than having the whole load of the game, that's going to end up saving a lot of room, at least at start and everything, until people can afford to or get their hands on external or just add on space for their hard drives. The only unfortunate part about this, though, is that it's up to developers to actually put that into the games, as far as I've heard. Because although Microsoft is making this available, it doesn't mean developers are going to use it. Another neat feature that Microsoft is doing, I haven't heard that PlayStation is going to be doing this, or I should say Sony, is that they're going to be having, there's a name for it, but I like to call it like a quick start tech, where you see, if you ever played the mini consoles like the NES Classic or the Super Nintendo Classic, where you can kind of just back out of the game and it will give a little save slot there. So like even if you were jumping midair over Bowser and Mario, you can put your controller down, go to work, whatever, and it will save that spot. And so there's no really excuse anymore for, why can't you just save and put down the game? Microsoft is kind of eliminating that, so that no matter what you're doing in the game, you can just quick pause it and then go do what you need to do and come back to the game another time. Whether that means that the system will be on standby mode or anything like that, I'm not too sure on those details just yet, but we'll find out down the road. So another feature Microsoft has confirmed, I hope PlayStation or Sony ends up doing this in the near future, is that you will be able to store not only your old Xbox One and older games on an external hard disk drive, but also you can store your Xbox Series games on a hard disk drive as well, an external one linked by USB 3.2. Now, why that's cool is because, again, rather than having a ton of storage, you can end up putting one of your games on over to this hard disk drive storage. You won't be able to play off of that storage, though, because for the speeds that the Xbox Series X needs or the Xbox Series S needs, in order to play the Xbox Series games, it has to be on the system in order to play it. However, if you want to save space, all you got to do is you go, okay, I'm going to move this game on over to the Xbox Series console external hard drive, and then I'm going to move over the game that I want to play today. And although that's still annoying, it's not as bad as an internet connection, because you might not have the fastest internet. So it's a lot better, I think, too. Like, there's only so many cheaper options that you can do with the technology that they're coming out with, because some of it's proprietary and whatnot. So again, I think that's a really cool feature, and I hope PlayStation follows suit. Another note worth mentioning is that Microsoft won't be using region locking anymore. So a example of that is PAL. So back in the day, they'd have either different games running at different ways and stuff like that with older systems. The PlayStation 3 actually got rid of region locking first, so all their games played the same way across the board, pretty much. Whereas the Xbox is now getting rid of region locking and stuff like that. So it kind of gets rid of also older game stuff as well. Like, if you owned, say, a old Sega system that ran on PAL, you could play the Sonic games. And if you played a PAL region version of the Sonic games back when Sega Genesis was out, it would run faster on your North American TV and everything, because it's having to run at 60 hertz instead of 50, even though they've modded the game to run at 50 hertz in the PAL version normally. So like, if the 50 hertz PAL version is running alongside the 60 hertz NTSC version, they run at the same speed. But if you make that 50 hertz one run at 60 hertz, it's going to run even faster, and then you have some fun with those old school games. So that kind of gets rid of that, but either way, it's neat that they're moving along to that side of the technological stuff now as well. So on to more juicy details about the Xbox Series X. It's been running very hot. Lots of people who have been sent ones for reviewing have been saying. It's almost silent because it runs very quiet. However, even in standby mode, it runs quite hot. Lots of people are worrying, could this be a red ring of death waiting to happen much with the Xbox 360? Now, Microsoft has been stating that the heat coming off of the system, the Xbox Series X, is expected, and that's normal. When they released these systems to be reviewed, that's what's going to be released to the public. That's how hot they're supposed to run, is because they're very high performance. And then there goes on to be more information. The Xbox Series S is the coolest system of all the main systems that are coming out in this next generation. It's running at 47 degrees Celsius, or 58, also I should say 58 degrees Celsius at the hottest. So between 47 and 58 degrees Celsius. And the Series X runs at 52 to 62 degrees Celsius. So one when it's just working normally, and one at its hottest. But for all you Fahrenheiters out there, that means that the Series S is running at 117 to 137 Fahrenheit, and the Xbox Series X is running at 126 Fahrenheit to 144. So that may sound a little hot to you, but that's actually not hot at all. That's just warm. I'll get more into that later on, about comparing that amount of heat to other things. So I've been talking about how Microsoft has been very pro-consumer this time out of the gate. They weren't as much with the Xbox One out the gate back in 2013. And although Sony is still being okay, Microsoft is almost pulling out all the stops to be very pro-consumer. And one of the things that they're doing is if an Xbox One game says smart delivery on it, that means that you'll be able to put the game in your Xbox Series console, so whether it's the S or the X, and then it will download what it needs to and all that kind of stuff to make it into the Xbox Series version of the game. So to give you an idea of the difference there too, say you play a really old game for the Xbox 360, like Rainbow Six Vegas 1. It's going to be upgraded graphically and everything, yes, but it's not a cross-generation console game. An example of a cross-generation would be, say, Grand Theft Auto 5. It was cross-generation from the PlayStation 3 to PlayStation 4. It was on both consoles, and in fact, it's going to come out for the PlayStation 5 as well. So that's an example of cross-generation. So it's not just upgrading the graphics, it's almost entirely different altogether. And what Microsoft is doing is allowing you to pretty much play an Xbox Series game for free as long as you've already bought it for Xbox One. So again, a good way for you to save money. I'll go into more about what PlayStation does as their version of that in the future here. Another way that Microsoft is being very pro-consumer, I'm going to say all these prices in American, just because I'm not too sure what their prices are going to be in Canadian. They're offering 24-month interest-free payments to get a Xbox Series X or an Xbox Series S. Again, I believe what they're offering them for is to get the Xbox Series X is $39.99 for 24 months, and for the Xbox Series S, it's going to be $24.99. Now, you might think, like, oh, over 24 months, that's more money. That is interest. Well, they also are offering Xbox Game Pass Ultimate with it, which is $14.99 per month. Again, these prices are all in American dollars. So you might go, okay, well, that sounds more reasonable, but what's the breakdown? Well, the breakdown is that over 24 months, $299 American works out to $1,249, so that's how much the Xbox Series S would be if you broke it down to 24 months. And the Xbox Series X is about $2,083 over the course of 24 months broken down as well. So when the math is done, you end up with, if you're getting the Xbox Series S in this deal for $24.99 with the inclusion of the Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, it's actually worth $27.48 per month, because you got to think the $12.49 plus $14.99 per month. So it's worth $27.48, but I believe the prices that they're wanting for it is $24.99. So you actually end up saving about $3 every single month for 24 months if you're already planning to get the Xbox Game Pass anyway. So you end up saving money with that deal. Whereas with the Xbox Series X, you end up paying $39.99, again, I believe so, when the $14.99 plus the $20.83 equals $35.82. So you are paying about an extra $4 per month there. But even so, I think it's very pro-consumer because people are being given the option to not have to put down $500 American or more if you're Canadian, $600 Canadian, to be able to buy this system. Instead, you can put down $40 or $25 American and you can have the system right away and you get Xbox Game Pass Ultimate with it. And yeah, you're paying it for 24 months, but the systems are really awesome and they're going to last longer than 2 years. So this way you just don't have to put down a ton of cash right away. You essentially can walk away with a next gen system for $25. So I think that's pretty cool. So now I'm going to go into a little bit of random information about what's been going on also when it comes to all the next gen stuff. A little bit is a little off topic, but it is nerdly rambling after all. So one of the things I wanted to talk about is developers like NVIDIA are actually going to start taking scalpers more seriously. They've moved back the dates that they were going to release the RTX 3070 graphics cards so that they will have more stock ready so that more people can get those cards and not the scalpers. However, I don't think that's a fantastic tactic because all it's really making sure is that they end up being able to sell more of the product, which is a good thing. It's good for the company, good for the consumer, because then there's more product to be sold. However, I'd way rather see them just put up three or even four layers of protection when it comes to protection against scalpers and bots. That's what I'd rather see. And here's another tidbit of information. MSI, one of the producers of graphics cards from NVIDIA, they used their own subsidiary company, one of their own subsidiary companies, to sell RTX 3080 graphics cards on eBay at a scalper's price. What ended up happening was they released a statement about this and everything too once they were found out, is they accidentally, and I would say that with air quotations, sent some graphics cards to their own subsidiary, which their own subsidiary then sold at an inflated price. Do I think that was an accident? No. I think they were hoping that they would just be able to get away with that because some people were buying these graphics cards at inflated prices anyway, so they may as well capitalize on that income. So I think that was a very shady move on MSI's part. I've not really cared for their products in the first place anyway, but now that I know they were willing to do something like that, they're not on my nice books. Another shady thing going around right now is Nintendo has started denying that Joy-Con drift on the Switches is a real thing. And they started doing this when a class action lawsuit came out against them. And I understand why they're doing it. Like, it's better to deny. And then that way they can maybe not have to fix a problem as long as it doesn't become a huge thing. And even if they do fix the problem, this way they don't have to pay for anything. And I took a look the other day in Canadian dollars, new Joy-Cons are anywhere between $39.99 to $59.99 Canadian, so $40 to $60. So it makes them more money to not have to fix it, even though I believe the issue has been fixed with the 2019 model Switch. And again, I've heard rumors of a 2021 model coming out and dealing with it even further. It's way better for them to keep denying, because this way they don't lose a class action lawsuit, they don't have to fix anything, and or even have to even attempt it, and at the same time they can keep making money off of new Joy-Cons, even though I guarantee their original thoughts with new Joy-Cons is, oh, do you want a black one, do you want a red one, do you want multicolor? It's so that you can have multiples, or if they did end up breaking or anything, you can buy other ones. I don't think there was any malicious intent there, but I do think it's a bit of a bad move on Nintendo to deny that any of this is happening in the first place, when there is clearly evidence all over the place that it is. Also, if you're not too sure what Joy-Con drifting is, what it basically is after using the controller that comes connected to your Switch, after a while, the knobs that you use to make your character move around, you cannot be touching the system, and yet the system thinks you're pulling slightly to one way or the other, so your character will slightly start moving even though you're not doing anything. So that's a glitch slash defect. And the only reason this is also a very big deal is because of the Switch Lite, which I do not recommend anybody buying, period. You may as well spend just a few extra dollars and get yourself a Switch, even if it's the older model, because the Switch Lite is one solid unit. You can't replace the Joy-Cons on there. If they start drifting and you hate that, the only thing you can do about it is hopefully get your money back from someone, or get yourself a new Switch Lite, or get this real Switch like you should have done in the first place. So that's why I don't recommend those products until Nintendo ends up fixing that issue. But on a lighter note, I should say, a bit of good news. More information keeps coming out that a next Switch or some sort of Switch Pro might be coming out. Again, I've heard rumors of a 2021 model. All the rumors pointed to that it was going to be a refurbished version or whatever you want to call it again of the 2019 model, much like 2019 was to the 2017 Switch model. However, when you see things like job postings for developers, as well as developers being told to get their Switch games ready, 4K ready, I should say, and then you hear that they might not be switching the Switch. They might not be switching what the Switch looks like. So it might end up being a Switch Pro, not so much to lengthen the longevity of the Switch itself, but more so just to come out with one that can kind of keep up with the consoles that are coming out, to be able to play some of those games for a little while until they want to come out with a new console. Again, not so much to lengthen the life, but to come out with a better version, possibly. I don't know if they're actually going to do that or not, but it would probably save them a little bit of money using the current Switch look, but just changing the hardware within, and then that way it's able to kind of keep up for some time longer. So moving on to PlayStation information. PlayStation 5 has reported that they're going to have a boost mode. Now, not beast mode, a boost mode. I did say boost mode, but I'm just making a joke. So the boost mode for PlayStation 5, what it's supposed to be able to do is it's going to allow the games to run at 60 FPS at 4K. Now, from what I've heard, the Xbox Series X is going to be able to run games at 60 FPS at 4K as well. And a lot of people were worried that the PlayStation 5 wouldn't be able to do that. Well, that's what this boost mode is supposed to effectively help with, which is awesome because I originally heard that both PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X were going to run their games at 30 FPS at 4K, and at lower resolutions, they were going to do 60 FPS. More news on a possible PlayStation 5 Pro. So of course we know that a PlayStation 5 Slim, like every other PlayStation that's ever come along, and actually for a long time, they've always remade the consoles a bit slimmer or smaller or more compact. We'll probably see a PlayStation 5 Slim by 2022 or even 2023. And the reason why there's more information, or more of a possibility, I should say, on a PlayStation 5 Pro is because there was a patent filed for the PlayStation 5 Pro a little while ago. Not too long ago, but a little while ago, about that. So again, it's a possibility that it's going to come. And since the PlayStation 5 most likely will only have a lifespan until 2025 or 2026. Again, that's what we've been hearing about this generation, because the technology is moving a lot faster and everything now, with everybody also willing to pay a bit more money and everything too, unlike Generation 8. There's a good chance that maybe we'll see a PlayStation 5 Pro by 2023. So I spoke before about how Microsoft upgrades games to allow for an Xbox One game to, in a sense, become the Xbox Series game. So you don't have to rebuy a game or anything like that. You can just buy it once for either console, and then you have it for both. It will just do the upgrades for you. However, what Sony is doing is they may end up, for some games, not all of them, but I believe probably it will be ending up being the majority of PlayStation 5 games that are also for the PlayStation 4. You'll be paying for kind of like a DLC, where the upgrades to the PlayStation 5 version will actually cost you some money to download that. So again, they're not being very pro-consumer there. So more information on the PlayStation 5. They did finally do a PlayStation 5 reveal. And after playing the PlayStation 5 for nearly 2 hours, I think it was about an hour and 45 minutes, they noticed there was no real heat coming off of the system or noise, and it stayed relatively cool. Because of its size, though, and the and all that kind of stuff with how it's able to ventilate all of that, it's always recommended with any of these systems since the seventh generation at least to have a good amount of room for it. Like, you can't just put it inside a tiny little space and think that it's going to be not overheating or anything. The room that this was, that the PlayStation 5 was in, was around 27 degrees Celsius. I heard 82 degrees Fahrenheit, so that's where I got the 27 degrees Celsius from. Because of the lights on it and everything, it made the room a lot warmer. So again, at 27, a room at 27 degrees Celsius, as long as it has lots of room to breathe, apparently it runs very well. One of the things I don't like about the PlayStation 5, though, is what I found out, is that it needs a stand to either have it rest flat or have it rest on its side. And that concerns me for just a couple of reasons, and I'm a worrywart. It concerns me just a little bit because, first off, plastic warps. So what happens when it doesn't really fit it properly anymore? Not only that, what happens to the system or, say, the discs inside while playing if it doesn't have the stand? Like, if some people don't know to use the stand, or, say, somebody ends up buying one secondhand and it doesn't come with the stand, how easy is it to replace one? How easy is it to maybe just fit some cardboard underneath in case you just can't get that anymore? Again, I'm looking at the longevity of the system here, and I don't like that it needs a stand. A stand is always good, like, to make sure it doesn't fall over or whatever, but I don't like that it needs one. Because, as a example, the Xbox Series S and X do not need a stand, as far as I know. So why does the PlayStation 5? I just think it's a bad feature. Also, for some reason, they haven't been really showing much of the UI about the PlayStation 5 yet. I think the main reason, though, is just because it's not entirely done. Like, I'm sure it's done, but they'd rather, when it gets shipped to people and people actually get to start playing it, that any updates or tweaking that they want to do to the UI, to have people see it then. And here's a little tidbit of information for you. Japanese consumers are angry that the OK or Go button on their controllers are being changed from the circle to the cross. So I remember playing Final Fantasy VII, and it's OK button, like, to move forward or anything like that. In the texting, when you'd be talking to a character, was the circle or O button. But then further Final Fantasies were always the X button. So I guess in Japan, they kept it the circle button, and now are finally switching over to the cross or X button. I guess Japan has to finally, in a sense, catch up to the rest of us. And many of the Japanese consumers are upset about this, but I think it's mostly just because people are creatures of habit. So some people did run a test on the PlayStation 5's ray tracing ability. I don't think it has to do fully with its graphics capability or processing capability. It was mostly to do with the ray tracing. And it was very on par with the RTX 2060 Super graphics card, supposedly. In my mind, what that says is that's where it's at right now, because it's still dealing with PlayStation 4 games. But I think by, like, 2022, we might see capabilities much closer to, say, a 2070 Super, or even higher with time upwards to a 2080 Ti. The only reason I bring that up, again, I've said stuff about graphics cards and everything, even though we're talking about consoles, is because it's a good way right now to kind of see where the systems are graphically, or ray tracing ability, or processing ability, with other hardware, to kind of get an idea of what we're going to be having. And my only reason why I think it's going to change over time is you always see at the beginning of a generation consoles, where they'll come out with a game, or, say, have a cross-generation game, and then the game that's specifically for the next system will be very much more powerful. And you might even see, again, a bit of a leap near the end of the console generation, that particular generation, whatever generation it is, so with the PlayStation 4 or PlayStation 5 or whatever, you'll see a big change in the graphics power again, because they really, again, I like to use this term, they really get down to the metal. And I'll get more into that in a moment. So Sony has also confirmed that about 99% of PlayStation 4 games will work on the PlayStation 5 at launch. That's a good thing. There's a small amount of confirmed games that won't work, and I will put a list of those in the description. But I read over them, and none of them are games I've ever heard of, nor game titles that I think anyone will ever miss. So I stated before how warm the Xbox Series X and Xbox Series X are running. The PlayStation 5 is apparently running the hottest of all the systems. It's running at 55 degrees Celsius to 65 degrees Celsius under hard workloads. Again, though, for people that are dealing with Fahrenheit, that's 131 to 149 degrees Fahrenheit. And to give you an idea, I was going to say before, like, oh, that's not as high temperatures as you think. The 2080 graphics card in a desktop runs around 74 degrees Celsius, roughly, which is about 166 degrees Fahrenheit. So you might go, oh wow, that's much hotter. Well, yeah, it's actually quite hotter than the hottest any of these consoles are gonna get, but it's still not that bad. You shouldn't have to worry for a lot hotter. These systems are designed, very much so, these new ones anyway, to be able to get this hot and have nothing go wrong. So don't worry too much about it. Finally, I'm going to digress a little bit with just some little tidbits of information. I was stating before, like, the different consoles that are coming out, the bottleneck is going to be where the amount of information that you can hold in them, the amount of memory or space. And the Xbox Series X will hold maybe about 4 games, the PlayStation 5 will hold maybe about 3 games, and the Xbox Series S will hold maybe about 2 games. Because you got to think, the Xbox Series X is going to be a terabyte, yes, but you got to think all the stuff that's going to be in it already before you put any games on it. It's going to have roughly 800 gigabytes. PlayStation 5 will have somewhere around 700, maybe less. And then the Xbox Series S, is probably going to have 400 or less gigabytes. So yeah, with the size games are now, never mind PlayStation 5 or Xbox Series games, they're going to take up a lot of space. And also about features with the PlayStation 5, I don't like that you have to open it up and take apart it a little bit to be able to get to where you can add more storage to it. And we're not talking about switching out the storage, we're talking about adding storage to it. So with the Xbox Series X and S, you literally just plug in the extra storage like you would, say, a cartridge in the old systems. Whereas to add storage to the system on the PlayStation 5, you have to take the cover off and do a couple things. I think for the average person, especially say for a child who's playing some of these games, they're not going to know how to do that. And there's also 14 hooks on the cover of the PlayStation 5. So it's going to be a little bit of a hassle to put back on. I think a lot of people are going to end up just keeping it off, probably. I know I might, because honestly, if it's left open, you can clean it easier too. So I don't know why they'd make it that hard. Finally, just the last couple of things I wanted to say, why I keep bringing up the graphics cards on computers and everything. So, for instance, the PlayStation 5 has been compared to a 2060 Super graphics card, a RTX graphics card. Well, when that graphics card first came out in 2019, so just last year, it was $399 American. And the whole system of the PlayStation 5 is being sold for $499, only $100 more. So you're getting an entire system for that. Whereas the graphics card, you only get the graphics card. And as I also said before, that's what it's kind of being compared to right now, only ray tracing wise as well. Graphically, it might be more powerful. And also that could change as developers get down more to the metal, because most games are designed for these consoles. Computers are designed for the games. So the consoles are able to run these games far easier than computers, because no matter how well the computer is built, it's going to still be a little bit of a Frankenstein. You're still putting parts together and trying to get the most out of them. So that's why I say when it comes to, say, the 2080 Ti, I think that's how far the graphics on these games will become on these systems by at least the end of the life of the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X. So just to clarify, and also to say on prices as well, to get a computer that can that has basically the same stats as a PlayStation 5 or Xbox Series X, you have to spend a minimum, and this is in American dollars again, $1,100 to $1,300 American. And that's the minimum to be able to get these kinds of systems on a computer. So no matter if you're a computer gamer or a console gamer, just know that these systems, you're getting a heck of a deal. You're getting stuff that's going to make a lot of graphical power, and yet you're spending at most half of what it would cost if you were going to do that on a computer. You can get way more out of a 3070, because the 3070 graphics card, the RTX 3070 that's coming out later this month, I believe, or early next month, it's supposed to be better than the 2080 Ti, which is awesome, but that's on a computer, and that's also a $500 graphics card. You're just buying the graphics card, never mind the CPU or RAM or anything that has to go with the system in order to make it run well. So when everything's said and done, you end up spending a bit of a pretty penny. So it is far cheaper if you want to game using a console. The only bottleneck with these consoles is the amount of memory that they have. So with that, take care, everyone, and have yourselves a great day.